You're listening to NPR on Health. I'm your host, Joe Neal. Today's podcast is all about feet. Tired feet, sore feet, happy feet. We'll hear about some exercises you can do when your feet get sore and you start developing a condition called plantar fasciitis. We'll hear about shoes, which ones are good and which ones are bad. And finally, we'll hear an interview with a journalist who's been writing about the movement to go barefoot. Our first story is about sore heels. Now, maybe you've had the experience of putting your bare foot down on the floor first thing in the morning and getting a twinge of pain. That could be the beginning of a condition called plantar fasciitis. It often occurs when you've worn the wrong shoes, and there are some pretty simple exercises that you can do to relieve the pain and keep it from getting worse. NPR's Allison Aubrey tells us more.
Elizabeth Kankel has never had heel pain or heard much about plantar fasciitis. She's a 24-year-old architect living in Washington, and this time of year she likes to walk to work in her flip-flops, which she was happily doing the other day when we approached her, along with a foot doctor named Steve Pribbett, who's not a fan of flip-flops.
They're pretty comfortable, keep your feet cool, so it's nice.
And do you wear them all day long, or you just sort of wear them when you're commuting?
I just wear them walking back and forth to work and then put on the heels once I get into the office. So
I noticed a Band-Aid on that foot. Is that from a heel?
Yeah, it actually is from, well, they're actually really cute wedge sandals, but they kind of dig in because they're new.
Kneeling down for a quick examination, Pribbett explains that both of Elizabeth's workday shoe choices, the flip-flops and the backless sandals, pose the same potential problem that could lead to plantar fasciitis. He says when your heel does not stay attached to your shoe, there's a lot of extra motion in the foot.
Wearing an open back shoe, when the heel lifts off the ground, there's a lot of tension that develops in the plantar fascia, and it increases the angle that the whole foot makes with the ground, and the toes bend up further, and that just stretches the plantar fascia more.
The plantar fascia is a band of connective tissue in the foot, similar in texture to a ligament. It runs all the way from the heel up through the ball of the foot, and strands wrap around each toe. It's vulnerable to injury, especially as we age, but your choice in shoes can make a difference. To prevent injury, people don't have to toss out flip-flops or high heels entirely, but when you're walking a lot, presumably on hard sidewalks, Dr. Pribbett says it's better to wear shoes with some support. Back at his office, he picks up a pair of ASICS jogging shoes that he says are ideal. They're lightweight, don't have too much heavy cushion, and most importantly, they do not bend in the middle.
When I take this shoe and press it down, it bends just at the ball of the foot where the toes attach to the foot. That's right where the shoe should bend.
When shoes have too much bend in the middle, Pribbett says it puts tension on the plantar fascia. One of the biggest offenders among fashionable shoes today is the ballet slipper, or very thin flats. Out on the street outside Pribbett's office, we see lots of women wearing them. Dominique Arvanitas says she likes them because they're comfy.
I walk around a lot, so the flats are good for me.
Perhaps compared to heels, but Pribbett says swapping them out for Crocs or sandals with a little support and a strap around the back would be a big improvement.
The ballet slippers scare me just about as much as the flip-flops do.
If you're now wondering whether there are any fashionable dress shoes that may actually be good for your feet, it might be time to ask a different question. That is, what can you do to strengthen or stretch your feet when you're not wearing shoes? That's where foot doctor Colleen Schwartz comes in. She's merged podiatry with Pilates for a more preventive approach.
We ask a lot of our feet. There are so many bones. There are 26 bones, there are 33 joints and 100 muscles and ligaments and tendons. And in order to give them the attention they deserve, spending a little bit of time every day can be so beneficial.
A little time means just 3 or 4 minutes of stretching and toning. And Schwartz says the best time to do it is first thing in the morning. Before even getting out of bed, she starts with an Achilles tendon stretch. Here's how you do it. You take a towel or a strap and grab each end. You wrap the middle of it behind the ball of your foot and then stretch your foot towards your shin by pulling the towel.
Getting an increased plantar fascia stretch at the same time is drawing the toes even further up.
meaning flexing the toes as much as possible. The idea behind this stretch is that the fibers of the Achilles tendon go all the way to the heel, so there's a strong connection between a limber Achilles and a healthy plantar fascia. Schwartz says all the foot exercises she does at home, she does barefoot. It's also fun to go barefoot on the beach or in the grass, but when she goes about her daily life outside home, she does advocate shoes, as does podiatrist Steve Pribbett.
I think barefoot is good for some things. Shoes are good for others.
Pribbett says the barefoot movement may be gaining a little attention for its novelty. And the idea that thousands of years ago, shoeless civilizations had healthier feet could be true. But Pribbett says back then, the average life expectancy was about 30. And cavewomen didn't have to contend with glass, nails, hard concrete, or fashion.
Joining us now is NPR's Allison Aubrey. That was a very interesting story.
Thank you, Joe.
Let me first take a look under the table here. What are you wearing?
Actually, I have covered up the back of my ankle with a strap so that my heel stays connected to my shoe. And as we just learned, that's a good feature to have in a shoe. So,
well, you were talking about fashion at the end. How much does fashion play a role into foot problems and what people decide to wear?
Well, I think shoes in our culture are part function and part fashion. I mean, even those who aren't a slave to fashion, even women who don't wear, you know, stilettos, still think about having their shoes match their outfit. So fashion is part of it. And merging fashion with something that might be comfortable as well can be hard to do.
So let's talk a little bit more about some of the things you discussed in your report. And first, I should mention that you had a great slideshow on the web, too, and I would encourage people to go look at that at npr.org/health. But tell us more about the questions that people have been asking you since they saw that slideshow.
Mostly people have been asking me, how are my shoes? I have had a few staffers here in the building call me and say, I'm wearing clogs. How do clogs fare? And to which I do have a response.
Yes.
That I actually made a follow-up call to Dr. Pribbett this morning. And, you know, he said that because the clogs have, the cover extends further back on your heel. They're not the worst, but you're typically with clogs, your heel is still lifting off. So on a score of, out of a score of 1 to 10, you'd probably put them somewhere in the middle. But if you're not having problem with heel pain, not to worry.
Well, what about Crocs?
Well, Crocs got a small mention in the radio piece, as we just heard. And the reason that I mentioned them is that they are better in the minds of most podiatrists because two things are happening there. You've got a little bit of support. They have a little contouring and to match your foot. And they also have the strap in the back so you don't get the heel lifting off, which, as we've just discussed, can lead to problems.
Well, and when you have problems, the slideshow really explains some nice exercises to do.
I actually learned so much just by working with Colleen Schwartz, putting that slideshow together and reporting that. And when I actually started going through the exercises that she's recommending in the slideshow, my feet felt a relief of tension immediately, particularly in the one where you're putting your ball up against the wall, which she's recommending you can do in the shower, and the heel lifts as well. I mean, one of the things that I had never sort of paid attention to, the point she makes is that we have so many joints and so many bones, and we expect so much about our feet. They have to be rigid and they have to be flexible, yet most of that we're doing in a shoe all day. So when you get your feet out of the shoes, the idea of working those, you know, in the small muscles inside the foot to stabilize the ankle, it all makes such good sense.
Well, you also talked about the barefoot movement, the people who are advocating going without shoes. And we're going to hear in a moment an interview with Adam Sternberg, who's a writer for New York Magazine, who wrote an article that got a lot of attention earlier this year. What do you think? I know you read that article. What do you think about where is the science that underlies some of the things that were said in that article?
It was actually my starting point for my radio story. I was very interested. It got a lot of attention on the NPR website. I went back and read the article in New York Magazine. And so when I started putting out calls to podiatrists, and I spoke to lots of them, and physical therapists as well, I started asking, hey, what is it, you know, what is it with the barefoot movement? Do you think that this is catching on? Are you hearing a lot about it? And for the most part, what I heard back from podiatrists was sort of a note of practicality that, in a way, if you read that article for fun and think about the argument of going barefoot, or if you read about the guy who tries to go barefoot even when he's shoveling his snow, there's not a lot of practicality there. We live in a built environment. We walk on concrete every day, as we discussed. There are nails and glass in the streets around us, and our feet are used to being protected. It offers stability to us. So is there a case to be made for being barefoot in your house and by, you know, and being barefoot in the times of the day when your feet aren't at risk? Absolutely. One interesting point is that there was mention in that article about a guy who ran a marathon barefoot. What was not mentioned is that the man went on to run more marathons later on, even faster, and he was wearing shoes.
Well, great. Thanks for stopping by, Allison.
All right. Thank you, Joe.
So now we'll hear that interview with Adam Sternberg. He was interviewed by Mike Pesca on the NPR program Bryant Park Project.
All right, let's check out the shoe ledger. No, not the shoe leather, the shoe ledger, the ledger of pros and cons of shoes. Pro, blue suede shoes, that's a good song. Con, well, barefoot is also a good song. Pro, shoes keep out dirt, keep out sharp things, keep out dung. Con, they're killing your feet. That last con is worse than you thought, according to Adam Sternberg, who's written an article called You Walk Wrong for New York Magazine. Now, Adam, you've never seen me walk, have you?
I haven't.
You're right, actually, about me. I totally walk wrong. But you're saying not just me, Mike Pesca, who walks on his toes as if there's a fire or glass on the ground. Everyone walks wrong?
Well, everyone who wears shoes
walks
wrong.
Most people we encounter on the streets,
and
unless
the reason
we're
is
Maasai
because,
warriors. Yes.
Exactly. And the reason is because shoes make you walk wrong.
Is this a conspiracy of some sort?
Well, it's sort of a conspiracy of idiocy. When I first handed in a draft of this piece, my editor's question was, how did we get to this point? And part of what you discover when you look at the history of how shoes are designed is that at no point really did anyone sit down and say, let's design something that works with your foot so that you can walk naturally and comfortably. You know, in the Middle Ages, people wore very high soles on their shoes so they didn't walk in other people's excrement. More recently, people like to wear high heel shoes because they look sexy. Or, you know, there's a number of reasons why people wear the shoes they wear, none of which have to do with actually working with your foot.
Now, with high heels, I don't think you'll get an argument out of anyone that they're actually good for your feet. They're for aesthetic reasons. Women like wearing them or feel they have to, or men. But for even shoes that are marketed as comfortable shoes, or people who say, all I care about is comfort, you're actually saying, and podiatrists and experts are saying, they're not as comfortable as no shoes at all?
That's right. What people seem to be discovering, and the more you think about it, the more it makes sense, is that actually the human foot works pretty well as it is. Obviously, once upon a time, people were designed to walk around barefoot on the earth, and no one thought about, you know, putting on a pair of Nike Air shoes. Over time, because of all the reasons you cited, people didn't want to step on glass or nails or whatever, we decided to put our feet into shoes. However, what's happened is that we wear shoes as if you were wearing a cast on your arm. You know, as one person said to me, imagine if someone put a cast on your arm when you were 3 years old and you never took it off. Your arm would stop working. And that's kind of what's happened with our feet.
So just as a practical matter, there are people who like to go barefoot everywhere. But you'll concede that in the urban setting or the suburban setting, that some form of covering over the shoes is necessary, over the feet is necessary.
Oh, yes. I will. Not only do I concede that, but I live that every day.
You cover your feet.
I do.
And not out of shame.
Yes. This article didn't start out being necessarily about walking around barefoot, but about the idea that we could be walking better. And of course, New Yorkers walk a lot. And so the idea that you could walk better seemed like of interest to people in New York. However, when I realized that a lot of people think that barefoot is the most natural way to go, I thought, okay, well, this is a bit of a dead end because I'm not going to convince anyone, including myself, to walk barefoot in New York City. It's crazy. However, there are a number of shoes now on the market that purport to offer the benefits of walking barefoot. So I started to look into that and also just how you can alter your walk to get those benefits.
And so what are some of the benefits? Well, let me ask you, how well do these shoes or shoe-like apparatus, how well do they approximate the barefoot walking experience?
Well, they range from, there's a shoe called the MBT or Maasai Barefoot Technology, which was designed by a Swiss engineer after he studied the Maasai tribe in Africa who walk barefoot and traditionally have very few foot problems. It's pretty commonly accepted that people in the world who go barefoot for much of their lives don't suffer from nearly as many problems with their feet as people in the West who traditionally wear shoes.
But of course, people go barefoot most of their lives. They live in places that aren't paved for the most part.
This is true, although there was a way back in the 40s, there was a podiatrist who went to India to study the bare feet of men who pulled rickshaws in Calcutta, and what was then Calcutta, and he discovered that they had incredibly healthy feet. And I think sometimes the rationale that we use for wearing shoes, and especially heavily cushioned shoes mm-hmm. in the city, is that, well, concrete and asphalt are hard to walk on. They're not like sand at the beach. But I think we sometimes overplay the extent to which our ancestors were walking around on pillows and cushions all the time. They weren't. They weren't walking on asphalt, it's true, but you know, in many places in the world, the ground is quite hard and not significantly more cushiony. They were actually able to absorb the shock by walking differently, not by walking on something different.
Walking differently, which people argue would be walking naturally.
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so we did a diversion here, and we were talking about the MBTs, the Maasai barefoot technology, and the different types of shoes that are like being barefoot.
Well, that shoe would be on one end of the spectrum, and the irony of that shoe is it has the word barefoot in the title, and yet to look at them, as I say in the article, I mean, they look like Frankenstein shoes. Mm-hmm. They have a very thick sole, and the idea is, well, the Maasai walk around on a soft, unstable ground, so we're going to put something soft and unstable between your foot and the earth. And it does affect the way you walk. However, I found they were totally unsuitable for urban walking because basically if you're walking slowly in a straight line, they are beneficial and they can help your walk. If you have to, say, run for a taxi or stand on a subway or do any of the other things that require you to move sideways or quickly, they're not the most stable shoes in the world. Let's put it that way.
And another ironic thing about their title, even though they have barefoot in the title, they also have Maasai. And I think the Maasai get no money off of their shoes.
No, they do not.
So what else do we have?
And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have some shoes, for example, these shoes called barefoot. They're called Vivo Barefoot. Mm-hmm. They're made in England by this guy named Galahad Clark, who he's Clark as in the family, the Clark Shoe Company. They make Wallabies, sort of very famous old English shoe company.
He's like the grandson or great-grandson of the discoverer and inventor of Clark Shoes?
Yes. His father, actually, was the guy who invented Wallabies. And he was convinced to make these barefoot shoes, which are sort of the opposite of the MBT shoes. They're just essentially like a slipper with a kind of Kevlar-like substance in the sole that prevents it from being punctured by glass or nails and stuff like that. Because he met a guy who had designed this shoe for himself because he found that he was suffering a lot of sports injuries, and his father had said, why don't you try playing tennis barefoot? And he thought, well, you're crazy. And then he tried it, and he really liked it. So he sort of designed the shoe, he brought it to Clark, and now these shoes are commercially available.
Do you wear them?
I'm wearing them right now.
For a show, or is this, if you didn't even, let's say they rejected the article, would you be writing them, wearing them?
I would still be wearing the shoes.
Okay.
And I'm receiving no promotional fee for saying that.
Describe the feeling, what they do for you and your walk.
The first thing you notice when you're wearing them is that they kill your heels. As you walk on the sidewalk, it hurts your heels. And a traditional shoe advocate would say, well, you need to switch back to, you know, sneakers that have a big cushiony heel on them. However, the argument of the barefoot shoe, I mean, if you walked barefoot on the sidewalk, the way you not walk in your shoes, it would hurt your heel. And the barefoot walking advocate would say, that's because you're walking wrong. And when I said to the guy when I got the shoes, I said to Galahad Clark, do I need some sort of instruction or how am I going to know how to walk in these? I said, it's instinctual. You have to wear them and get used to them. But after a while, you'll find that your walk starts to change. And it's true. That's what happens. You start to step more. You land on your heel, but it's a much softer landing, and you roll through your foot
mm-hmm.
Differently than you would with a shoe. Basically, shoes, a traditional shoe with a lot of cushioning is designed to allow you to walk with the bad habits that you have because you've been wearing shoes all your life. Shoes perpetuate shoes.
So all shoe technology now is, let's solve the problems caused by the shoes that came before us.
Yeah, it's a sort of a classic self-perpetuating system.
All right. Adam Sternberg, who wrote You Walk Wrong for New York Magazine. Your next article is what, loincloth or lie cloth?
No, I think I'm going to be staying away from feet and body nudity articles for a while.
All right. You had a niche, but you turn your back on it. Adam Sternberg from New York Magazine. Thanks very much, Adam.
Thank you.
That was NPR's Mike Pesca doing the interview. You can hear the Bryant Park Project at our website, npr.org/Bryant Park. And that's it for today's podcast. If you want to hear more health stories, you can tune into your local NPR station. There's a list of them at our website, npr.org. And while you're there, you can find even more health and science stories by clicking on the tab over on the left side of the page. Thanks for listening. I'm Joe Neal, NPR News.